the best in the world.
I've been the best ever since day one. On this microphone, in that ring, even in commentary. And trust me when I tell you, I am the hottest property in this industry today. Nobody can touch me. The only thing that's real is me, day in and day out. I am the best in the world. Do I have everybody's attention now?
What up, people? I said, what up, people? What up, people? Welcome to another edition of the Salty Thoughts and Mike Steph podcast, featuring the one and only Mike Steph, best in the world at what he does. Yes, man. I'm back for another week. First, before I get anything underway, I'd like to thank each and every one of y'all who made last week's editions. Episodes, some of the most watched, dare I say, one of them was the most watched sports episode that I've released since I rebranded Salty Thoughts Podcast under the moniker Mike Steph, well, my name, Mike Steph, over the last year. So I'd like to thank each and every one of y'all for making that possible. I'm going to let y'all know one thing that by the end of this episode, I will determine whether or not I will be repeating my feat from last week, which was giving y'all twice the pleasure and half the time. Meaning, whether I was going to give, well, I'm going to give y'all a double dose, a double barrel approach of the Salty Thoughts of Mike Steph as we continue on the concurrent road, the road to 50 and the road to 200. And I haven't made up my mind yet, so I will let y'all know by the end of this episode. Yes, I will. I'm going to let y'all know what's on tap this week. Well, at least on this episode. And that will be three topics. Two sports. One piece of news. Item number one will be a continuation of Jets Free Agency. Y'all should call me Nostradamus. They should call me Nostradamus, but that's in the past. But pretty much you should call me a seer. You should call me a fortune teller. Because when I said that Mike Williams should not leave that building without a deal, guess what, my Jets faithful? Guess what, Gang Green? Just guess what, Jets fans? I was correct. So I'll be talking about the latest signing in Jets Nation, Mike Williams, and a potential signing, or maybe a potential addition to this treasure trove of free agent signings that we've done so far in this offseason by the name of Jadeveon Clowney. Yeah, so that will be topic number one. Topic number two, I'll be segueing into baseball. I know, 2 weeks in a row, me talking baseball, you're probably trying to figure out where either A, I really don't have much to talk about, which would be a misnomer because I have plenty to talk about. Or B, maybe the baseball season is about to get underway, and you would be correct. I want to say Thursday, Thursday is opening day, the official opening day. I'm not talking about those three games that they're doing in Korea, because that's not in the US of A. So they don't count to me, even though they count in the standings. But there has been a controversy not involving my New York Metropolitans. And there would be a that controversy is surrounding two-time AL MVP Shohei Ohtani and his now former interpreter. And you're probably like, well, what does that have to do with us? What does that have to do with New York? It's sports. But also, more importantly, it's gambling. Yes, yes. There's been some, you know, some rumors. Matter of fact, not rumors. There's an investigation underway on exactly the depths of these gambling, this gambling situation, to a tune of $4.5 million in question, and why, and maybe we can get down to the bottom of why, A, MLB thinks we're fucking stupid. Matter of fact, let me take that back. A, Shohei Ohtani thinks we're fucking stupid. B, is there any truth to these allegations? And C, would it be, yes, I know it's front page news, but it's still smothered. Would it be possible to control your narrative if this situation took place with the New York Yankees or the New York Mets? Or just New York in general? Yes, I know you're saying, well, it's LA. It's the LA Dodgers. Okay. So, but anyway, we're going to talk about that. And last but definitely not least, I'm going to sway away from sports to bow tie this episode. And I will talk about this article that I read in the New York Post this past week, having an interview, so to speak, with the owner of Junior's Restaurant, famous for Junior's Cheesecake, and his thoughts on the current state of the city. Certain statements I agree with, certain statements I might not agree with, but I figured that'll be something to let the masses know about what's really going on in the city. You know, look, spike in violence, spike in crime, spike in this, spike in that, spike these nuts. But regardless, that's what's going to be on tap this week. Whew. Next week, I'll tell you about next week at the end of this episode. But before I get this show on the way, there's two things that doesn't really deserve their own segment, but something that I wanted to discuss nevertheless. Yesterday, you know, because Mike Steph has to keep this figure nice and svelte, nice Mike Steph has to get this simply ravishing body beach ready, even though I hate the beach, I hate sand. But should I say, has to get this simply ravishing body, Mika, ready. I was doing a little bit of exercise yesterday. I went to one of my neighborhood parks that has a track. And I said, you know what? I'm going to do about an hour around the track. Combination of walking, fast walking, sprinting, so forth. You know, get my steps in. You know, burn some calories, right? And I had to divert from my plan, and instead of going round and round and round the track, round the track, round the track, round and round and round the track I go. I actually went more around, more like round the block, round the block, round the round, around the block. And the reason why is because the track actually is surrounding I wouldn't say a baseball field, but a field that they choose to play baseball in during the spring and summertime on Sundays. You know, some leagues, most leagues, neighborhood leagues, whatever, but they kind of took over the track. And I got video evidence to, you know, to back up my claims. Here's one.
Yeah, so they're doing, I forgot, on Sundays, they do baseball games at the park, even though I figured it would be too cold to be doing baseball. So we got a game on this side, and a game on this side. You know, I forgot. You know, I was about to say something real derogatory, so I'm looking up this.
Okay. First of all, how y'all having two baseball games going on concurrently? I like to know. Like, do neither team bat for power? If you hit the ball on the other field, how do they know that that ball belongs to them? I don't know. Second of all, I was going to divulge what I was going to say that I deemed to be too derogatory to say in that clip, because actually that clip was part of my group chat, and I didn't want anybody to look at me like I'm one of those people. But needless to say, on Sundays, the track is taken over by, what's the most discreet way I could say it? The Spaniards. Yeah. They love the baseball. Yes, they do. Not only do they love the baseball, they love the weather. And I'm going to stop this because this is coming off way, way different than I thought and imagined it in my mind. But the second thing that I discovered yesterday was that maybe a burgeoning sport that may go, dare I say, citywide, and shoot, maybe it'll go nationwide. Come on, I'm acting like I can't talk. And that would be this, a Darby Allin special.
This is, I guess, bike hockey? Which is something I've never seen before. Wow. Interesting.
Yeah, you heard me right. Bike hockey or bike polo, I guess. So they blocked off. They were actually playing in a handball court, right? So they blocked off the handball court. God forbid somebody want to play some handball. No, we need to be subjected to you and your people riding bikes in a circle with the ball, a goal, and some stick that looking like mallets. But I digress. And they're actually checking each other against the fence. And I'm like, what is that? I really meant to ask, but I was so in tune with my well-being. And plus, I didn't want to be one of those people, you know. Hey, guys, what are you doing? We're playing bike hockey. You're playing bike hockey? At a handball court? Well, you know, the track was kind of, occupied, due to the Spaniards. Anyway, look at this clip one more time.
This is, I guess, bike hockey? Which is something I've never seen before. Wow. It's interesting.
interesting to say the least. So those are the two things that I discovered yesterday. I discovered that in 35 degree weather, some people just like, you know what? Opening day can't come quick enough. We need to get out on the field. And a new sport, maybe this is just, you know, divulging the fact that I don't get out much. A new sport called bike hockey. At least that's how I'm terming it. So, okay. Let's get the show in the world, huh? Without further ado, good night. And goodbye. The Jets. You know, StreamYard is starting to piss me the fuck off. I'm not even gonna lie. I've been trying to fight this ornery feeling I've had in my mood since the time I pressed record. And this little 30-second delay is really just pissed me off. But anyway, since last week, matter of fact, last week we discussed the majority of the New York Jets moves. Moses, Smith, Simpson, Kevlar, or Keylar, whatever the hell his name is. The dude that we got from San Francisco. And last week I did say that the Jets would be foolish to allow Mike Williams to get out of that building without having a deal in hand. And guess what? He had a deal in hand. Now, I talked about his stats last week. Deep threat. Master the 50-50 ball. Something that's going to allow Aaron Rodgers even a little bit more room for error. It'll unlock Garrett Wilson and will allow him to really eat underneath. Now, don't get me wrong. Garrett Wilson, he could be a deep threat. But slants, the coming over the middle, the back shoulder throws. If you have Mike Williams taking the top off that defense, and then you have to worry about Breece Hall in the flat, what are you going to do with Garrett Wilson? Huh? What are you going to do? I'm telling you. But not only that, history has gone and said that he is a durable guy. Now, yeah, I know he's always nicked up, but facts are facts. Within the last 5 to 6 years, he only missed 6 games up until last year off the ACL tear. And tell you the truth, before that week 3 injury, he already had 12 catches, 300 yards. He was on his way to a big year. And that was with Justin Herbert as the quarterback. And that's no slight, Justin Herbert. Best believe, I love me some Justin Herbert. Truth be told, he's one of my fantasy darlings. But there is a difference between Justin Herbert and Aaron Rodgers. You know, AR8. Now, I am really concentrating on the moves that have yet to be made. Like I said, we got Moses, Smith, Williams, and Simpson info. We have 3/5 of our offensive line is brand spanking new. I told y'all last week that we was going to be able to have a lot of flexibility in this upcoming draft at the number 10 position. Didn't I? Yes, I did. We get to go Brock Bowers. We can see if offensive lineman drops into our lap. We can potentially trade down because news came out today that Sean Payton, you know, that cocksucker in Denver, is looking to trade up for his quarterback of the future. Would I want my franchise to deal with such an asshole, to deal with such a piece of crap? Deal with somebody who desperately needed to be humble? No. But at the end of the day, we have to worry about us. Us, number one. J-E-T-H-H-H-S, number one. And if we have to, if it puts us in, optimum position by having to deal with, you know, the dingleberry on my black ass, then those are things that we just might have to sacrifice. But situation that we can control is Jadeveon Clowney. He came into Florham Park last week, had discussions with the Jets. I believe he had discussions with Carolina, but Carolina's off the bat. Unless they blow him away with an outstanding offer of maybe a multi-million dollar deal, he's not going to Carolina. He had that taste of playoff excellence, that taste of playoff action while he was with the Baltimore Ravens last year. He got to the AFC Championship game, and you know, maybe he could look at us and say, you know what, Baltimore's lost some pieces, Jets have gained some pieces. They're going to have their quarterback in tow. They were Super Bowl contenders last year, at least in name only. This year, actually with substance, they should be in contention outside of KC. And tell you the truth, with our depleted team last year, with our less than pristine team last year, it took the refs to steal that game away from us against Kansas City. How many interceptions did we force Mahomes in? Two? Three? Hollywood Brown is supposed to scare me? Fuck out of here. Anyway, if Clowney decides to sign with the Jets, I mean, right now, as we speak, I believe the roster, our roster on paper, is probably the best in the AFC East. On paper. Buffalo is taking a step back. Miami is taking a step back. And they're witch guard. They're circling the horses, circling the wagons, trying to, you know, persuade Odell Beckham Jr. to come to South Beach. All right. Tell me how that works for you. And the Patriots are still in transition. And Gerard Mayo has even gone on record saying that, you know, they're not going to be pressed to take a quarterback in this upcoming draft. Okay. Look, Jacoby Brissett, solid player. To me, that's telling me that y'all not in win now mode, nor should y'all be. Y'all got to rebuild. Matter of fact, I won't say rebuild. Y'all have to put the prerequisites, people in the optimal spots to run Gerard Mayo's system, to allow that to totally be Gerard Mayo's team. But why am I talking about the Patriots? Do I give a F about the Patriots? No, I do not. The Ravens, like I said, has taken some blows on the defensive side of the ball. And the Chiefs, they suffered a loss last week to this shutdown corner. While retaining the rights to Chris Jones, that team on paper don't look better than the Jets right now. And I know. This is the same road that we went last year, but no, this is not the same road we went last year. Because last year there was glaring holes on our team. And we just believed that Aaron Rodgers was going to be the elixir to all our ills. This year, at least Joe Douglas is getting on the grind saying, you know what? The best thing that happened to us last year was to let us know that 7-10 season, we got 7 wins out of our defense. And they didn't even play up to the same standard that they played in the year before. We had 4 quarterbacks play last year, which equaled 0. We had Breece Hall, who didn't come on into the back end of the season. We had Garrett Wilson get 1,000 yards receiving with 0 quarterbacks. And we still got 7 wins. That just shows you the talent that is on this team. It just needs to be together. 1,000 points of light. Dare I say, in the AFC, the only team that matches up on paper with talent is the Cleveland Browns. Are the Cleveland Browns. Whatever grammar you want to say. And even them, they got problems at quarterback. Joe Flacco ain't coming through that door no more. They got Jameis Winston. Okay, see how that works out for you. Remember, Jameis Winston, didn't he break the record of interceptions in the season with 30-something? He's 30 touchdowns, 30 interceptions in the same season. Okay. How many W's he going to eat? Deshaun Watson. Shoot. The way they running up in Diddy's crib, you know, Homeland Security, running up in Diddy's crib, taking people in for questioning, taking people into custody. How long before they go into Shea La Watson, his crib, and see what masseuses he has in ball and chains? Yeah. I went there. I wonder if Deshaun Watson, the reason why Deshaun Watson had such an abysmal year last year and just seemed like he could never get loose is the fact that he had to cut off all his masseuses around the world. He couldn't get right. He couldn't get somebody to give him that happy ending. Just saying. Now, to me, the need for the Clowney deal to get done is due to one thing. I won't say one thing only, but one important thing. And that's the need to replace the 10 sacks that we lost with Bryce Huff leaving the building. Bryce Huff leaving a franchise. Bryce Huff leaving a team. The one plus that we do have if we get Jadeveon Clowney. And besides, you know, I figure I'll put some respect on his name. Yeah. The one good thing that we do have if we get Jadeveon Clowney to sign that dotted line is the fact that he's a three down player. Strong against the run as well as the pass. So if you have Jermaine Johnson, JLM, Quinnen Williams, and Jadeveon Clowney, not only are you going to get some pressure, you're going to be stout up the middle. You're going to be stout against the run. And that's no shade to Bryce Huff, but he did wear down the second half of last year. Like, out of his 10 sacks, only two of those sacks were garnered in the back half of that season. Like, a one-year deal might get the job done unless, like I said, he's blown away by another offer. And from what I was reading and what I was watching, Jadeveon Clowney, especially every time he's been a free agent since his days in the Houston Texans organization, when he deems it time to sign the dotted line to a new team, it's more like unwritten agreement until June, July, because he does not like OTAs. Now, of course, you want somebody in the building, but if it's an unwritten agreement, then there's ways you can just slide them that playbook underneath the table. Say, look, this is what we're running. This is the tapes. You know, just familiarize with that. We have no doubt that you're going to be in the best condition in your life. And then in June, when it comes to mini camp, you'll be ready to go. I think that might be what the holdup is. And that piece of news with the late signing, look, because I'm a man, I don't claim anything to be my own solely if I have a source to quote. And I was watching the Badlands podcast on YouTube, and gentlemen, the people over there, like, I'm a Conor Rogers fan. People over there doing great jobs. So, you know, I got that tidbit of information from them, and tell you the truth, it kind of lines up. So we'll see. Today I woke up to brand new breaking news on the NFL rules front coming out of the owners' meetings. The hip drop tackle has been banned. I'm showing example on the screen right now. When the hip drop tackles that unfortunately Tony Pollard got injured on, not this past season, but the season prior, in the division championship, division game against the division playoff game against the 49ers. And the reason why they're banning this is due to the amount of lower extremity injuries that we've had over the last couple of years due to this technique. And it's been met with a lot of outrage, primarily by defensive players, both current and former players, fans at large, and of course the pundits. Now, you got to think of it like this. Over the last 5 to 10 years, let's say 5 years, probably a little bit more, there's been such a focus on making the game safer, allowing the players to have better longevity in making a living. Now, it's supposed to be a penalty similar to how they banned the horse collar tackle, unsportsmanlike conduct penalty, 15 yards plus automatic first down. It's very controversial, to say the least. And what makes matters even worse is it's up to the referee's discretion. Now, one of the former players that spoke upon this was AJ Hawk, daily contributor, daily co-host of the Pat McAfee Show. And his displeasure with the rules was the following. More like, okay, you're giving the referee the discretion on whether they deem it that to be a hip drop tackle or not. Whether they deem that the defensive player pretty much deadweighted himself while he had the offensive player around the waist to bring him down. Have the refs been trained on how to detect that? Do the refs even know what they're talking about? Or are they going to look at the aftermath? Also, the contradictions when it comes from the NFL, when it comes to safety. I'm going to use this as an example, right? As recently as a couple years ago, you've extended the NFL regular season to 17 games by one game. And quote unquote, you removed a preseason game, but it's still the same amount of games, right? 20. And that was the compromise because they wanted to go to an 18-game regular season, which I'm quite sure will go into effect pretty soon. That's number one. So you're adding games for more revenue, for more wear and tear on the player's body. Two, you, every team in the league has to play a Thursday night game. So if they have a Sunday, so they have Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, they have three days of recovery before they back on the gridiron again. Do you not think there's going to be more wear and tear, more injuries due to the fact that at least one day a week, you're not only going to have a short week like if you had a Sunday night game or you had a Monday night game. No, you have a Thursday night game. There's a reason why football is not like baseball. It's not like basketball in which they play multiple games in a week. But that's the trend that we're on right now, right? Why? For more revenue. Third way of how they're contradicting themselves. Do you not have an expansion of games outside the country, overseas, in Europe? There was, when it was like once or twice a year, I believe there was a rule that the teams that had to go over to Frankfurt, Germany, or go over to London, England, that game would be prior to a bye, so it allowed them to kind of get their body clock back in order. That's been out the window, because I remember there was a game last year those teams had regular rest, well, regular time off, but did not account for the wear and tear of having to go across seas, having to go and revert and change your internal clock, and then had to come back and put it back right back to normal to play that following Sunday. There's been scuttlebutt for the last couple of years that we're about to sell our Super Bowl to one of these countries overseas. And why is that? For more revenue. At this point in time, matter of fact, by them hampering the defense even more, you stop the amount of headshots, which I get. The concussions were getting out of control. Plus, not even out of control. For y'all, the concussions were getting unaffordable because of the lawsuit that y'all lost with the concussion lawsuit. So that's why y'all start regulating pretty much like a hit zone. Not above the neck, not below the waist. Because when you took away the headshot, not saying they shouldn't have, but when you took away the headshot, then guess what? Everybody was getting their knees blown out. And mostly to a man, or at least this is what I've been led to believe, a player, their legs, they'd rather deal with a little fogginess if they can continue their career, then their leg is blown out. Ain't nothing they could do. Career over. I'm not saying it's correct, but that's what we've been led to believe. We've been told by certain players over the years of, look, if I had my choice, I'll take a concussion. Because I guess they feel like, look, the wear and tear, we're banging heads 60 minutes a week. So it's going to happen, right? So you took away the head. You took away the legs. So pretty much you had the torso. And now you're saying, okay, you cannot use the torso to attempt to bring said players down. Like, at the end of the day, that's why I have one on the screen. Is flag football upcoming? I mean, they started doing it in the Pro Bowl because so many people was... The Pro Bowl became unwatchable because, like, this is the one sport that you cannot play an all-star game, especially a meaningless all-star game, at the end of the season when the players have nothing to gain but a vacation to Hawaii. And nowadays, especially with the money that's going around there, they go to Hawaii every week if they want. So you can't ask them to put their bodies on the line. So that's why you kind of capitulated to, all right, you know what? We'll have an assembly of game flag football. But trust and believe, the billions and billions of dollars that the NFL has been garnering over the years will not be in effect, will not be able to be attained if this becomes a glorified game of flag football. Just saying. Other rules that have been changed are the following. Rule number one. This was, I believe, referred to by Detroit. Amends Rule 15, Section 1, Article 1 to protect the club's ability to challenge a third ruling following one successful challenge. In layman's terms, before, you had two challenges. If you made one, get to keep the second one. Now, if you make one, get to keep the second one. If you make that one, you get another one. So, yeah. So now you get a possible three. This one was by the competition committee. Amends Rule 14, Section 5, Article 2 to allow for an enforcement of a major foul by the offense prior to a change of possession in a situation where there are fouls by both teams. Okay. That one went over my head. But the next one, by the competition committee, amends Rule 12, Section 2 to eliminate a potential dangerous tackling technique, i.e. the drop, the hip drop tackle.
Yeah.
So those are changing rules. I believe there is something, there's another rule. Matter of fact, I hate doing this, but I had to get this one correct. There's a new kicking rule. The NFL competition committee met today and unanimously approved the tweak to the proposed NFL hybrid kickoff rule, making touchbacks that go into the end zone on the fly come out to the 30-yard line rather than the 35-yard line. The change provides kicking teams a less punitive option if they don't want to take the chance on a long return. The adjusted rule proposal will be presented to the owners for a possible vote this Monday. Well, yesterday. Well, today. Monday morning. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting how these rules are going to really affect the play, the day-to-day, or the week-to-week play in the NFL. I don't understand what they're trying to attain besides safety, which everybody knows is a farce. You know, I'm going to use this semi-quote from a certain someone in the desert, and I think it's real apropos. Because they told me a family member kind of likened the NFL and the NFL draft to slavery, slave trades. You know, let's see how big this buck is. Let's see how wide he is. Let's see how fast he is. And a lot of this disregard for the safety of players on one hand with their actions, but yet the other way they're talking, they're coming out their mouth. I mean, the words that are coming out their mouth, just not mathing. It's just not mathing. You know, And it's other words like, well, we're going to try to preserve you, just your, preserve your health just long enough in order for all the owners, you know, the overseers, to actually get their money. And then once you're used up, once you're damaged good, off to the woodshed, off to the glue factory. We don't need these stallions anymore. We don't need these thoroughbreds anymore. We don't need these bucks anymore. Yeah, so. Now, we're going to get into some baseball talk. Go figure. I know. 45 minutes in, and I'm actually going to talk about some baseball. But when I say it's going to be a doozy, woo-wee, it's going to be a doozy. I took notes on this situation because I wanted to be as accurate as possible when trying to detail the timeline of events that have gone on with Shohei Ohtani and his former interpreter, Ipe Mizunara. I'm probably chopped up his last name, but so be it. The guy to your right. I'm going to read parts of an article in my notes and give you my opinion either throughout or at the end. Shohei Ohtani, and at the time of this writing, this was prior to him speaking to the press Monday evening. Shohei Ohtani plans to speak to the media Monday for the first time since the illegal gambling and theft allegations involving the Los Angeles Dodgers star and his interpreter emerged during the team's trip to South Korea, i.e. the unofficial start of the regular season. The interpreter, Ipe, let's just call him Ipe, right? was fired by the Dodgers last week when the team opened the season with two games against the San Diego Padres in Seoul, Korea. Manager Dave Roberts endorsed Ohtani addressing the matter publicly. He said it was the two-way superstar's decision to do so. It's the right thing to do, Roberts said. I'm happy that he's going to speak and to speak what he knows and give his thoughts on the whole situation. I think it will give us all a little bit more clarity. Yeah, that's what they thought. Ipe was let go from the team following reports from the Los Angeles Times and ESPN about his alleged ties to an illegal bookmaker and claims from Ohtani's attorneys that the Japanese star had been the victim of a massive theft in the name of $4.5 million siphoned out of one of his accounts. With so many unanswered questions in this scandal, namely, did Ohtani knowingly pay the illegal bookmaker to cover his friend's debts, as Ipe first claimed before he was accused of stealing? But yeah, there was. He gave ESPN, one of the ESPN reporters, a 45-minute interview in which he actually said that Ohtani's such an upstanding guy, such a close friend, that he gave him the money to take care of the situation. And then when the shit hit the fan, all of a sudden he got accused of stealing and was led to the door or led to slaughter. As Ipe first claimed before he was accused of stealing, Ipe's mysterious past is under scrutiny for discrepancies as well. Ipe's biography with the Angels, with whom he worked as Ohtani's interpreter from 2018 to 2023, claims that he graduated from the University of California, Riverside in 2007. But as first reported by NBC Los Angeles, there's no corroborating report, no corroborating record in the university's database. Lie number one. Multiple news reports cite that Ipe worked with Okajima for the Red Sox in 2010. But the Red Sox dispute that claim, and it's unclear where it began because Boston's media guide from that season lists two other interpreters for Okajima. So that's a lie number two. Now, quote, we are reaching out to all of you because of the reports in various outlets stating that Ipe worked for the Red Sox as an interpreter, which is incorrect. The Red Sox said in a statement released to multiple media members per The Athletic, Ipe was never employed by the Boston Red Sox in any capacity and was not an interpreter for Hideki Okajima during the pitcher's time with the team. Please know that we have thoroughly checked our files to ensure that we are providing accurate information. Other words, stop putting us in this bullshit. You had no ties to the Red Sox organization. So I don't know what situation you're trying to cover up in your past. Don't bring us into this bullshit. That's your own dirt. We got enough bullshit to deal with ourselves. Major League Baseball finally opened up an investigation in the matter. The Internal Revenue Service, aka the IRS, aka Irvin R. Shysters, has confirmed that Ipe and Matthew Boyer, the alleged illegal bookmaker in Orange County, California, are under criminal investigation. Otani only made a brief appearance in the Dodgers clubhouse before Sunday's freeway series opener against his former team, the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. And the teams are playing three exhibition games before the Dodgers host St. Louis in their home opener on Thursday. Otani, while he was in Anaheim, where he was a two-time AL MVP before leaving the Angels as a free agent to sign a record $700 million 10-year contract with the Dodgers in December, has a lot of things swirling around him. That $700 million, the majority of that was scrutinized to begin with because the majority of that is backloaded. Majority of that is deferred because one of the figures that I've heard was he makes about 8 to 9 figures a year off the diamond. I wonder how much of that money off the diamond has nothing to do with betting, has nothing to do with sports gambling, has nothing to do with gambling in general, but neither here nor there. To continue, Dave Roberts said Otani has not addressed his teammates as a group, which to me, look, I know you're the shining star, you're the marquee player, the marquee game name in that locker room, but to me, that's bad locker room etiquette. Everybody else is having to answer for your bullshit, and yet, as a group, you haven't gathered them as a group and like, look, nothing to worry about. Well, don't worry about. I'm going to take full responsibility for this situation that's already casting a cloud over our promising season with such lofty expectations. That's some bullshit. That's some bullshit. Like, if I'm Mookie Betts, get me the fuck up out of here. Matter of fact, send me to City Field. Did I just say that? I don't know. Robert says, I think he might have had one-off conversation with the players, but nothing in depth. Really? Other words, like, yo, mind your business. That's what it's reading to me. Mind your fucking business. Got nothing to do with you. When you're a man of my stature, I would need to explain shit to your plebeians, your peons, your Cretans. And he probably said that to a translator, to an interpreter. I know what this means, both in English and in sign language. Robert says, you know, he's checked in with Otani to see how he's doing, and he's kind of business as usual. I bet he is. Otani has had a double locker in the Dodgers clubhouse located between the shower room and fellow Japanese pitcher Yamamoto, who is slated to make his second start of the season on Saturday against the St. Louis Cardinals. Extra security was posted in the jammed clubhouse on Sunday. Why is he getting preferential treatment? It's not like somebody's coming in for his head. Somebody wants, the media wants answers. The fan base wants answers. The world of MLB wants fucking answers. And you owe it to everyone to give them some answers, period. Don't have fucking bodyguards standing guard like you're some type of fucking deity. Fuck out of here. Extra security was posted in the jammed clubhouse on Sunday. Besides the players and a horde of media, 8 temporary lockers were set up at one end for minor leaguers brought over from Arizona for the freeway series. Ain't that some shit? Sami Zayn just lost too. It looked like he busted Bronson Reed's snot box over there. But anyway, the MLB gambling policy is posted in every clubhouse. Betting on baseball, legally or not, is punishable by a one-year ban from the sport. The penalty for betting on other sports illegally is at the commissioner's discretion. Yeah, okay. At the commissioner's discretion. In other words, if I feel like giving him a slap on the wrist, I can. If I feel like ignoring it, guess what? I can do that also. If I feel like turning the other way, nobody's going to force me to hold him accountable. It's at my discretion. But best believe, if he got caught with a syringe in his ass, he'll get 82 games. Sports gambling is illegal in California, even as 38 states and the District of Columbia allow some form of it. That means if he placed a bet in that city, in that state, he is liable to be up for prosecution. Now, here is the current news. This evening, Shohei Ohtani spoke to the media for the first time since his translator was fired following accusations that he stole more than $4 million from Ohtani to cover his illegal gambling debts. In a roughly 12-minute statement, Ohtani denied ever having bet on sports and said repeatedly that Ipe had lied to him throughout the process. I've never bet on baseball and only other sports. No, sorry. I have never bet on baseball or any other sports or never have asked anyone, anybody, somebody, nobody to do that on my behalf, Ohtani said to interpreter. And I have never been through a bookmaker to make bet on sports. In conclusion, Ipe has been stealing money from my account and he has told lies upon lies upon lies upon lies. Ohtani, after said statement, did not take not a damn question. That leads me to this. Who does he think he's fooling? Matter of fact, I know exactly who he's not fooling, but he's playing for a fool, and that's Rob Manfred. Everything is seems like it's circumstantial evidence. I know we'll probably get the real story when the IRS completes their investigation because it was a money transfer. It was a money wiring. So that automatically brings, especially something that amount, that automatically brings the IRS into play because they're like, all right, was there taxes on that? Did you pay taxes on that? Where's this money from? Is this a gift? That's an awfully big gift. If that was for winning, did you file taxes on those winnings? So once the IRS completes their investigation, then we'll be able to know exactly what was what. I believe Ipe did not have that 45-minute sit-down if he thought that anything was wrong with what he said. And then when the firestorm started, all of a sudden, the Dodgers went into cleaner mode. Got to get everybody the F up out of here. Matter of fact, we got to get him out of here because we just invested $700 million into this guy. And we have big, lofty expectations. And we can't allow one of the underlings to bring this whole house of cards down. And that's why they got rid of Ipe. But for Ohtani to skate clean at the end of this, it's too early to tell right now. But if you believe that $4.5 million just was out of the account and he's just like, you know what, that's I don't know, he was stealing from me, why would he stop at $4.5 million? They've been hand in hand. Look at this. Does that look like a relationship of, I have no idea what my interpreter is doing? Does that look like a relationship of, yeah, I'm robbing this mother effer blind and he has no idea? I swear. You know what? I still might. I got into the time I uploaded to the side. I think I might just entitle this episode Remix. Let me find out. We got the Okada of this baseball shit. Making it rain. And throwing his underling, throwing his ghetto out the way. Matter of fact, throwing his ghetto. So Ipe's ghetto and Ohtani is Okada. Except in this scenario, Okada got rid of ghetto instead of ghetto getting rid of Okada for the next big thing. And you see how the smear campaign is going? They're looking into his college background. They're looking back into his why all this shit didn't pop up when they were both in the Angels organization. Why did all this pop up now? Some bullshit. I know that's almost like my way of segueing when I'm about to change topics and say, this is some bullshit. But it's true. This story will actually have Smitty from the group home on Burger Beach very happy, because I'll actually be giving a little bit more attention to MLB more than I normally would do, because I want to see exactly what comes of all these investigations. Because what's going to happen if he's found to be a liar? He's found to be not the paragon of virtue that some believe he might be. I never thought that, because, listen, he runs the way he runs organizations pretty good over there. He's not an employer. I mean, he's not an employee. He is the organization. I wonder if the Dodgers know exactly what they were getting themselves into. And I wonder if shit hits the fan, are they going to be any type of way that they're going to be able to get out of that $700 million? Or are they going to be forced to pay him every single last penny? It's going to be an interesting season. And like I said, they should be happy. Smitty, you should be happy that this controversy has happened, because I might actually be talking about baseball on a consistent basis this upcoming season. Don't hold me to it. But that just might be a possibility. This past weekend, the New York Post had an article, a semi-interview with Junior's restaurant owner, and he had his opinions about the quality of life in New York City. And to be blank, to be blunt, he's kind of intimated that New York City has become undesirable. And in his words, I quote, "We want our city back." Shoot. I said it like that. This is once again showing my age. When Sergeant Slaughter, after he got vanquished by Hulk Hogan in the Ultimate Warrior back in the early 90s, and he had rose up the ladder as an Iraqi sympathizer during the height of the Iraq, the U.S.-Iraqi war, he was pleading in his turn, back to babyface. He would have these interviews, he would have these promos, and he would lean into the, into the camera and plead for forgiveness and say, "I want my country back. I love the USA. I need my country back." And guess what? It's almost like that's what he was saying. We want our city back, do we? I mean, at this point in time, look, I'm on a countdown clock. Like, as soon as I'm able to retire from my shoot job, getting the fuck up out of here. Peace. City's already gotten 48 years, going on 48 years of my life. And I can't front. Listen, I'm born and bred New Yorker, born and bred Brooklynite. I done lived in 3 boroughs. Brooklyn, the majority of my life. 6 month stint in the Bronx, back when it was the burnt down, boogie down Bronx in the 80s. And I lived out in Flushing, Queens, maybe a stone's throw away from Shea Stadium. Not City Field, Shea Stadium. Casino Boulevard, to be exact. And that was about for like 6 months. I even did 6 months up in Buffalo. Buffalo, New York, that is. Home of Griselda. Home of the Bills. So I am literally a born and bred New Yorker. But I even can admit that nowadays, New York ain't shit. New York ain't shit. Now, getting back to this article so I can keep myself on task, these are some quotes. These are some lines of the article. When did it become okay to shoplift in the pharmacy? Those who frequent Doreen Reed, well, whatever, Rite Aid to left, Walgreens, you know, and depending on what area, if you want a stick of premium deodorant, you got to go, "Hey, yo, I need this open." Or you want some cough syrup. "Hey, yo, can I get this cough syrup? Can I get Sudafed? Do you know that in New York, especially, I don't know how it is in other states in New York, like if you want to get some Sudafed, if you want to get some cold congestion medicine, you actually have to show a piece of ID. If I want some Allegra, Allegra 24, Allegra D, I got to show ID to get that. Due to the rampant theft going on in the pharmacies." I digress. In what society is that okay to shoplift from a pharmacy? People should not be able to shoplift at CVS, Rosen told the Post in an exclusive interview. Enough is enough. There are no consequences. And that is the problem. That I do agree with. Like, quality of life. And I'm not talking about broken windows policing. I'm not talking about the jump out boys coming and stopping frisking. No, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about when you have been found guilty of a crime. There should be no reason why you're going in and there's a revolving door 24 hours, less than 24 hours later, you're back out with a desk appearance ticket. I'm just saying. If you can't do the time, don't do the crime. The Citizens Budget Commission resident survey showing that New Yorkers feel things are worse today in virtually every measure than 6 years ago, i.e. prior to the pandemic. The pandemic was 4 years ago. I still believe it's going on, but that's a me thing, not an everybody else thing. Cashless bail law has been a disaster for allowing a few bad apples, serial criminals, to roam the streets and strike again and 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 again. New York's sanctuary policies make it too easy for migrants to obtain shelter and services without the ability to get a job. So you're getting all this shelter, all this money. Matter of fact, all this assistance. All right. But you cannot help legally contribute to the society, to the community that you're in. Now, in some ways, they are contributing to the community. Like, have you ever passed Prospect Park and you see senoritas out there with the shopping carts selling mangoes with hot sauce on them? Selling churros in the train station? Shoot, every train station doesn't have a grocery store. Every train station doesn't have a built-in mall. Sometimes these treats come right in handy. But I digress. Look at how much, and this is Mr. Rosen speaking. Look at how much we're spending to house migrants in hotels who have no jobs instead of hosting visitors, which actually brings more revenue to the city. But I digress. It's not helping anybody. We need to take care of the people who have been here first. That I agree with, because there's no reason why there is a law on the books that says if you come into the city, if you're from outside the country, you come into the city, we're mandated to give you shelter. But the people that have been here, been struggling day to day, the working homeless, I'm not even going to say the people that you see in the slums or what have you. I'm not talking about the drug-addled homeless. I'm talking about the working homeless, the ones that barely make it from check to check, the ones that actually sleep in their cars, the ones that go from house to house to house, to couch, because they can't afford the exorbitant amount of rent that New York City is currently, have at their disposal. $2,300 a month for a one-bedroom apartment. $2,000 a month for a studio. $3,500 for a two-bedroom, three-bedroom. And people want to know why people aren't having children. Shit, can't afford those mother effers. Not in this city. You can afford a hanger more than you can afford to raise your child. You do the math on that. Yeah, I know that's a little bit, that's not really discreet, but I'm just saying. Just saying. Too many of the city streets are dirty. And it's too much aggressive panhandling in tourist places. Like, tourist places I can't speak on because guess what? Your boy don't go into the city unless I have to. I'm on the outskirts. I'm in the boroughs. I went to the city the other day to drop my son off Chef Mix, Mr. RVD. Nobody gets higher than RVD. And just in that little area around Port Authority, I'm looking, I'm like, wow. I ain't missing much. Wow. It's kind of depressing. Kind of depressing, to say the least. It's disturbing. Just to see how this city has opened up and moved on and has not addressed any of the problems it had prior to the shutdown. And it's actually been exacerbated even more by the shutdown because the space between the have and the have-nots have increased tenfold. And as for the dirty city streets, I could go based on what's happening in my neighborhood. We have Austin Side Parking, right? Meaning you got to move your car for an hour and a half with a street sweeper to actually clean the streets. Do you know? And I think this is partially due to an unofficial slowdown with sanitation, but that's a subject for another day. But do you know that, number one, which works to my advantage, if you don't move your car, you're not getting a ticket. Maybe once a month, maybe, depending if they feel like a quota. And not even a quota, just like depends if they feel like getting out their car. But at the same time, since not really being enforced, that doesn't give anybody the reasoning to actually, you know what, I need to move this car so I don't get a ticket. Therefore, if I don't move the car, that means the street can't get swept. Meaning the street can't get clean. Meaning, do you know I still got stuck on, and some of these streets still have stuck on leaves that fell in October? Still on the sidewalk. That's how I could tell. Oh, the street sweeper comes down here, or the street sweeper don't. Do you know this? And I'm smell blind, but do you know? So I've been told that there's a constant stench of horse shit in the air, because why am I going to curb my dog? Or matter of fact, maybe they're curbing their dog, but maybe they're not picking up their shit. And there's no street sweeper to actually put some detergent down there. So therefore, it's just, man, do you know how rank this city going to smell in the summertime? It's going to smell like nothing but dog piss and dog shit. Along with unwashed box. Along with, I think I might have just went over the line right there, but truth is truth. Especially when we get that first warm day, when you got the hybrid of the tights with the Uggs. Watch the tights with the Uggs, looking like Thundar the Barbarian. There was man, this is ridiculous. New York, undesirable. Like I said, I'm ready to get out of here. I'm sorry, I had to pause this for a minute because my attention really got distracted. Because I have this bad habit of, especially when I record on Mondays, I have this bad habit of not recording before our Monday Night Raw commences. And so therefore I'm recording in and out, and something just happened on the screen that I was like, you know what, I have to, because that kind of leads into what I'm going to talk about at the very, very end during the outro. But the bottom line this, because I didn't really mean to go this long. Bottom line this, stat of 78,000 people left the city in 2023, according to a new U.S. Census data, marking a slowdown in the Big Apple's population decline since the pandemic, but still the third year in a row that the numbers have dropped. Meaning people still trying to get the fuck up out of here because you can't afford it. Okay. Some people could think about, well, you know, you're speaking from a broke point of view. Your money does not stretch as long as it should. Even if you're not living from check to check, do you have enough to really save? If you're working at a stable job, I'm not talking about a minimum wage job. I'm not talking about a corporate job. Those are the two extremes. But if you're working at a stable job, making a good living, a good wage, you're still struggling unless you're going above and beyond. And even if you're going above and beyond, what kind of effect does that take with your health? If you're not getting the amount of rest that's necessary for you to live a long, prosperous life, can't take it with you. I mean, you can, but wouldn't that be waste? Just saying. Now, answer in the comments if you're from New York City. Matter of fact, if you're not from New York City, fuck it. Answer in the comments. If you're not from New York City, do you believe that these things are being fabricated? Do you think that people are going overboard? Do you think people are just talking out their ass? Do you think people just aren't really acclimating themselves to the new normal of New York City? And if you are from the city, put in the comments, what do you think about the current state? What do you think about the current climate? And do you think it will get better before it gets worse? Or do you think it's going to get better? Do you think it's ever going to get better? Or do you think it's going to get worse before it gets better? Put in the comments. You know, you'd be glad you did. So that pretty much brings us to the end of another edition of the Salty Thoughts of Mike Steph podcast. I'd like to thank each and every one of y'all for making me and this here podcast the one y'all choose to listen to. I did say that at the end of this podcast, I was going to give y'all my decision of whether I'm going to double dip. I'm going to give y'all twice the pleasure in half the time, or even though it's like already a buck 20, or am I just going to stay for one single episode? Well, being the fact I'm still in a good giving mood, I think I'm going to give y'all a double dip because I have a lot of resting thoughts I need to get off this noggin. And especially based on what I just saw on Monday Night Raw, this will probably be the most opportune time to get those shits off, to get my thoughts off. So, y'all can expect to have another episode of Wrestling Century episode later on this week. So, I guess if this is episode 47, no, next episode would not be 47 and a half because I do not plan on going an hour, even though knowing me, the way I run my mouth, it'll probably go an hour, but I will give y'all a video-only edition of the world-renowned, critically acclaimed series, Sprinkle of Salt. Yeah, Sprinkle of Salt, not really a full episode, but it's more than just a rant. So, yeah. Please like, subscribe, press the notification button. So when that episode or any episode I decide to drop or any shorts that I decide to drop on this YouTube channel of Mike Steph, y'all will be the first ones to hear it. Yeah. Since I'm getting into the plugs and trying to get out of here, check out the newest edition, the newest episode, a surprise episode, if you will, of Hidden Gems Football. That's right, Hidden Gems Football, hosted by myself and the Mojo King. New episodes usually drop on Thursdays during the regular season, NFL regular season, on the YouTube channel of the 19 Media Group. But we bless the masses. We bless the unwashed masses with a special off-season, a special free agent frenzy edition of Hidden Gems Football. Check out the Mojo King and myself on the YouTube channel of the 19 Media Group. And since I'm talking about that, I might as well give you a little taste on what you can expect when, not if, but when you check it out. On the outside looking in, you're just like, yeah, they did Keenan Allen dirty. Tell you the truth, they might have done him a solid, because they're probably thinking, look, we're not going to win this year. Let's put you in a situation that maybe in a weaker conference, maybe you have more of an opportunity to succeed. Just me.
My back's are terrible. All right. My problem with it, as much as I stated before, the other additional problem I have with it is that I believe what their idea is, that they feel like they're going to get a wide receiver early in the draft anyway, in which case now they have a new number one. I think it's complete hubris to think that you're going to get a Keenan Allen, that you're going to make the right selection to get yourself another Keenan Allen. So if I am a Chargers fan, I'm highly disappointed with what's happening so far. Because to tell you the truth, if you really want to start over, trade Herbert too.
No. No. Trade him. You already have the one piece. You already have the one piece. If I'm Jim Harbaugh, I'm not taking that job if Herbert's not there. He's the reason
I'm not taking the job if Keenan Allen's not there.
Okay. You'll be unemployed.
I may be. That's the reason I'm doing podcasts. All right, bro. I believe we both got to get out of here. Wrap it up for us.
You see, you see how multifaceted the Mojo King is? Not only was he telling me to wrap it up on Hidden Gems Football, that was my cue to wrap it up over here. But guess what? I still got shit I got to get off my chest. Please check out this week's installment of Gimmick Infringement, also located on the 19 Media Group YouTube channel. My brothers, Winchester and McDowell, have special guest Erica Lede recapping the Arizona Wildcats, the Lady Wildcats, if you will, their foray into March Madness, into the NCAA Women's Tournament. And they will be talking about, I believe they'll be talking about, you know, good old Mercedes Moné, amongst others. And they will be just talking about the state of women's basketball, if I do say so myself. This is me promoting them sight unseen, because I am going to check them out as soon as I wrap up here. But yeah, check them out and let me know, or I'll check them out and let you know on my bonus edition exactly what to look out for. Gimmick Infringement. They drop each and every late Sunday night, early Monday morning on the YouTube channel of the 19 Media Group. And also, last but not least, check out the Mojo King and his separate entity, the Hidden Gem Czar himself. Not hip hop Hidden Gem. Even though it's time. Like, when's the last time we had an episode of Hip Hop Hidden Gems? Yeah, I'm calling you out. I'm listening. But no, check his other entity out, his solo entity, Hidden Gems Golf. That's right, Hidden Gems Golf on all streaming platforms wherever podcasts are available, where he details the ins and outs of the world of fantasy golf. And of course, check out the Saucy Thoughts and Mike's Step podcast, available on the following platforms: Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Amazon Music. New episodes drop each and every Wednesday. And you can check me out on the social medias at Mike Steffens double underscore on X, formerly known as Twitter, at Mike double underscore Steph on the gram, and at Mike Steph single underscore on TikTok. Salute to all my people from TikTok that follow your boy, that follow the kid, that, you know, holler at the kid. I salute y'all. I appreciate y'all, because I'm probably the most antisocial social person that you will ever meet. And I think one last thing that I need to promote, because, like, why not? Check out my blog. Yes, that's right. My blog on WordPress. And one of these days I'll actually get around to actually putting it on the screen. MikeStephOrg.wordpress.com. That's right. MikeStephOrg.wordpress.com. For my latest literary excerpts, my literary excursions. I think the title for my next one will probably be, Can You Overachieve Underachieving? Can you? And I've been just ignoring this the whole time. Yes, I've been ignoring you too, Stitch. But I've been ignoring this little moniker the whole time. The preliminary boss. You know how The Rock says he's the final boss? Well, cocksucker, I'm the preliminary boss, meaning I'm the boss that you have to go through before you get to anybody else. I'm more like glass jaw at this mother effer without the glass jaw. So yeah, Stitch, you got anything to say? Yeah, you're still rocking the Scully. You know, you got anything to say? Do you? Nope. Guess not. So, with all that being said, I'm going to get up out of here while the getting is good. Check me out later on this week. Please like, subscribe, press the notification button, leave a comment, please share, all that other good shit. Look, I'm not begging y'all to do anything, but it would be truly appreciated if y'all do. And I'll catch y'all later on this week with that special video-only edition of the Salty Thoughts of Mike Steph podcast, Sprinkle of Salt edition. Goodbye. Yeah, I had to go to the Dominican barber of my choice and get lights up. But yeah, I know I'm still on screen. Y'all know what the routine is. You know, I gotta admire myself, take a step back and just admire myself and see that glow. Mike Steph has got that glow. The power of imagination. I got that glow.
Bye.